Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Caroline Hepker. Welcome to the programme. Coming up on today's programme, as the dust settles on the Chancellor's autumn statement, we'll get analysis from the Resolution Foundation, plus reaction from the TUC, the Federation of Small Businesses and the think tank Onward.
Now, Caroline, you know that I'm something of an optimist, but there wasn't really a great deal of hopefulness yesterday, was there?
No. And look, I hate the idea of talking the UK down. I mean, it's just too easy and it's annoying. Having said that, this is a really grim situation. After Jeremy Hunt's budget, you've got higher rates of personal tax. Living standards are going to get absolutely crushed. There's inflation, borrowing costs are going up, and the UK is already contracting. It was so hard to find any good news out of that budget.
No, it is not good. It is pretty grim. But I suppose let me try and put some of the case for optimism. I think on living standards, there is a big contraction going on. But we knew that already. You know, when we go to the shops and we see prices rising weekly and that we get our energy bills, we know that living standards are falling because of inflation. And on taxes, actually, if you look at what Hunt's proposed, unless you're earning 125 grand, actually, the tax rises coming this year and next year are pretty modest, really. They're not big tax rises. And on the economy, although GDP is now starting to contract, it is contracting very modestly, and we have full employment. So there is some good stuff to hold on
but,
to.
Yeah, but will people really feel optimistic if they start to lose their jobs and have to pay, you know, higher mortgages? It's going to be very, very difficult. I mean, the Institute for Fiscal Studies talks about Britain facing a long, hard, unpleasant journey. And in their words, it's been made worse by a series of economic own goals. And I would put this point, you know, how much of this is about, yes, we have an ageing population and there are international crises, but short-termist politics, more kind of focused on personality than policy, years of poor investment. It's, you know, there are a lot of issues that Britain has to face up to.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of short-term confusion. I thought one of the most interesting things about the statement yesterday was it seemed like a total repudiation to me of everything we were given 2 months ago. You know, so 2 months ago we were told that we need to cut tax at the top end for incentives, and instead we got an extension of the top rate tax band, and we were given, said it's fine to borrow unlimited amounts of money. Mm-hmm. We need to stimulate the economy. And we had really totally the reverse yesterday, which is, you know, quite incredible.
Yeah. The Chancellor, though, was defending his budget, of course, speaking this morning to TV and radio. He says that he has taken the difficult decisions.
There is nothing conservative about spending money that you haven't got. There is nothing conservative about not tackling inflation. There's nothing conservative about ducking difficult decisions that put the economy on track. And we've done all of those things.
Meanwhile, the Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, spoke to us on Bloomberg Television and Radio.
What a mess this country is in. We've had 12 years of Conservative government, 12 weeks of utter chaos, and it is ordinary working people and businesses that are paying the price for that volatility, that chaos that we've seen in recent weeks. And at the next election, people will be asking themselves, are me and my family better off with a Conservative government? And the answer will be no.
So that was Rachel Reid speaking to Bloomberg TV and radio just earlier this morning. So Britain's middle-income households, we are told, will be hit hardest by the unprecedented collapse in living standards. That is the phrase that has been used by the research firm The Resolution Foundation.
Yeah, the think tank says that the Chancellor has combined George Osborne rhetoric with Gordon Brown policy. Interesting phrase that. Announcing energy support today and tougher times tomorrow. Well, let's speak to Lindsay Judge, who is Research Director at the Resolution Foundation. Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. Now, as we get more sort of thoughts and analysis on the Autumn Statement, what's your overall take on the measures that the Chancellor set out?
Well, as you said in your opening remarks, the Chancellor had a really significant challenge yesterday. He had to fill this large fiscal hole that we have in the UK, but he wanted to do that in a way that didn't hurt the economy as much as possible. I mean, we're already in a recession. He needed to do that, you know, tread very lightly and not make a bad situation worse. I think you're looking for some good news if we want to do that. The one thing he did yesterday that was very welcome is that he protected the incomes of those at the bottom end of the income distribution. And he did that, of course, mainly through saying that he would raise working age benefits and the state pension by inflation next year. He could have easily chosen not to do that. And also by the uplift in the national living wage. But the other decision he made, of course, is to do a lot of work using not tax rises, so not raising the tax rate, but by freezing tax allowances. And what that does is it sort of gradually drags more and more people into paying higher tax over time. And that in particular hits these people on middle incomes.
Okay. I suppose given the fiscal constraints, what choice did he have but to hit people of working age and, as you say, to bring in stealth taxes to fill what is a £55 billion hole in the government's finances?
Yeah, I mean, the key balance in terms of filling the hole was the balance between spending and taxation. And this is where Jeremy Hunt definitely differed from George Osborne. So George Osborne, back in 2010, decided to fix his fiscal hole at that time using 80% spending cuts. And that, of course, ushered in an age of austerity. Jeremy Hunt, for good or bad, has decided not to do that. He's decided to go with these tax raises. And, you know, there's a lot of choices to be made there. There are elements of the tax system that he could have hit on. Labour has pointed to some of those this morning. But, you know, fundamentally, he needed to raise big money and he had to do that through these types of tax cuts. At the end of the day, I think this was probably a fairly grown up approach to the problem.
It wasn't a sort of deep blue Tory budget, was it? Your mission is to focus on those on low to middle incomes. And it does seem that he has tried to protect their incomes, doesn't he? Or at least tried to shield them from some of the inflation problems we're all facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was quite a lot of rumours flying around before the Autumn Statement that the Chancellor would decide to uprate or increase the value of working age benefits, so universal credit and disability benefits, by earnings. And of course, earnings significantly lag prices at the moment. If he'd done that, that would have taken a very significant chunk of money away from those at the bottom of the income distribution, the poorest households in the UK. And that would naturally have increased poverty rates. So the fact that he hasn't done that, I think, does, you know, as you say, is not necessarily, you know, the approach that his predecessor, George Osborne, took in the austerity period.
Okay. Ultimately, the Chancellor is planning to take £36 billion, though, from government spending on the flip side by 2027-28. It's sort of a familiar story, though, isn't it? There's money for schools and hospitals, but everything else gets squeezed. How difficult is that going to be to bring in? And of course, it depends on who's going to be in government in 2 years' time.
Yeah, I mean, the cunning thing, of course, is to push it out to the next government, for sure. And of course, we have no idea what political complexion the next government might have. Those cuts are very hard to make. And of course, they're very hard to make because those unprotected departments other than schools and health, have taken, you know, incredible hits over the last 10, 15 years from the original period of austerity. And there's not a lot of fat to trim there, fundamentally. And I mean, that you know, really points to having to hold down the wage bill in the public sector if the government really wants to claw back that kind of money in the future.
Jeremy Hunt says that taxing non-doms would be the wrong thing to do. He's worried about the effect on rich people, leaving and taking their spending with them. What's your take on this issue?
Well, there's often these types of tax suggestions made. I mean, the other one, of course, that's been made has been taxing private schools. I mean, there's generally not a lot of evidence that there's a massive behavioural effect on these types of things. But the big issue really is they don't bring in a lot of money. So they're often a bit totemic, really, rather than anything else. This is not something that's going to fill this big gap in the government's budget.
What would the Resolution Foundation have done differently? And obviously, there's not a lot of scope for movement, is there? But if you'd been in charge, what would you have done differently?
Well, I think one of the things that possibly Liz Truss got right was the focus on growth. I mean, without growth and without improving our productivity, then we're really looking at quite a dire outcome, even when we weather this storm that we've got coming our way. I mean, I think one of the things the Chancellor did yesterday that hasn't been much commented on is what he did on capital investment. So he's cut £15 billion from capital spend over the next few years, and that, you know, that's not a smart thing to do when you're looking at productivity rates that have been languishing for about 15 years in the UK. Investing in future is definitely what the government needs to do right now. Yeah, and of course the people who will be really hard hit by that are people who bought their homes fairly recently, or people who want to sell their homes and find themselves in negative equity. I mean, you're right to point out that you know, there's a lot of wealth disparities in the country, and actually if the government was really wanting to kind of tackle the tax system, that is where it would look to raise some extra tax. Wealth is very poorly taxed in the UK. I mean, in terms of social mobility, one of the big issues, of course, is young people today are so much less likely to be able to get on the housing ladder than their predecessor generations. Now, those falling house prices on the one hand might help them. Of course, rising interest rates doesn't help them. There'll be a net effect there, and that's a real problem, because we know that young people really struggle at this point in time to buy their own homes.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio. Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Now, yesterday on the show, we got the reaction to the autumn statement from Lord Billimoria of the Confederation of British Industry. Now, he broadly welcomed, actually, the announcements that were made by Hunt, but he warned of the possibility of a wave of bankruptcies and redundancies in the months ahead.
Well, the Federation of Small Businesses, though, say that their members were hoping for much more from the Chancellor. Earlier, we spoke to the FSB's Chair of Policy and Advocacy, Tina McKenzie.
For a Conservative government, it's quite surprising. You know, I think I heard the quote that Britain is a compassionate country. Well, that's so true. And you won't get any more compassionate than the small businesses of this country. However, and the owners, who sometimes go weeks without paying themselves to pay their staff. However, what I would say is, if Britain is a compassionate country, what is the Conservative Party?
You know, okay.
Is it still a party for business? I don't know.
Is there something that Keir Starmer has said to you that has, you know, that is appealing for the Federation of Small Businesses, for your members?
Yes. Well, I attended their conference and the Conservative conference, and I spoke with Rachel Reeves on a panel, as I did Jacob Rees-Mogg, and I have to say, I found her support for SMEs very encouraging. She agreed last year, not this year, she agreed at her conference last year to actually bring in the support for the rates relief for those smallest businesses up to £25,000, which is the one that takes 200,000 of the micro small businesses out of rates completely. She got it. She got what it meant. She knew that the rates system needs completely re-looked at. They also get late payments. They know we need to do something about late payments. So, I mean, they've given us certain commitments, and it's not the Labour Party I had heard of old, I have to say. It wasn't just about unions and employees, and even though, you know, we are all about the employees, it was actually acknowledging that you can't do what you want to do for the country unless you support business and get economic growth. And that was loud and clear from their conference.
So that was Tina McKenzie from the Federation of Small Businesses. Interesting what she had to say. She was quite supportive of the policy, the agenda being set out by Rachel Reeves and the Labour Party. So is the Conservative Party still really the party of business? We put that to Adam Hawksby, who is interim director of the Onward think tank, which is closely aligned to Rishi Sunak and the Conservative Party.
The Labour Party are clearly doing a much better job of courting business than they were previously. I mean, to be clear, the previous benchmark was very, very low with Jeremy Corbyn, but they are putting forward a pro-business agenda. My think tank wrote the Labour Party conference for the first time this year, and they appeared serious and credible. The challenge for them is going to be that they all need to move beyond the kind of pro-business mood music towards specific policies that add up. And that's where things are going to get really tricky for them, and more scrutiny is going to be applied to some of their plans. So I can understand why at the moment some of the business lobby groups are looking at Labour quite longingly. The question is whether that will last as we get closer to election and into some of the detail.
Politically, there's a lot of very difficult decisions in here as well. Does this essentially just seal the loss for the Tory party in the next election, do you think?
I don't think it does. I think there is a very, very narrow path to a Conservative win in 2024. You've seen that the initial bump that Rishi Sunak got in the polls has started to plateau. What I think this does is stabilise the markets. That was the most important thing that needed to happen, and begin to restore economic credibility. It is a very, very small first step on that narrow path to what 2024 win might look like. But there is so much more left to do. We need to see some really serious steps to restore growth, things like planning that need to be fixed. And particularly, we need to see movement on that levelling up agenda that all of our polling has shown is central to winning back 2019 voters. They want to see their high streets and town centres improving. And without some of that action, they're going to, I think, lose faith in the government. So this doesn't seal the deal for a loss, but it is only inching towards what a victory might look like.
OK, if some of the hard work was left for the future, and certainly that has been the comment that some have made, and Moore is saying that this is the pain has been backloaded, you can see how the politics, well, help me understand how the politics might play out here, because that could either make life difficult for the Labour Party if they were to win the next election, or it could make the next election very difficult for the Tory party, because what are they going to be pitching to voters if it looks painful?
There is a long tradition in British economic history of sort of muddling through or trying to delay some of these things and hoping something comes up. I think there is an element of that here. So the government will be hoping that either growth increases, the situation in Ukraine changes, there are material differences to energy prices, or indeed that inflation comes down due to some of the actions that are being taken both domestically and internationally. And because of that, the fiscal outlook looks brighter, and therefore some of those delayed spending cuts don't need to happen. There's something about signalling to the markets that you're willing to take tough decisions in a way that is credible enough that you can borrow at cheap rates, but doesn't necessarily require you to make the full amount of those cuts. So I think there's some of that hope that informs this political strategy that means that if the Conservatives do win, they won't need to deliver the full set of cuts that are set out in yesterday's autumn statement. But whether it's Tory or Labour after the next election, both are going to find it difficult. They'll just hope it won't be as difficult as the numbers spelled out from yesterday.
Well, that was Adam Hawksby of the Onward think tank speaking to Anna Edwards and Stephen Carroll just a little bit earlier today.
Well, we've been talking about business, but what about the impact on workers and consumers? So the Trades Union Congress says that the government has made the wrong choices in the autumn statement. So Tom McKenzie and I were speaking to the TUC Secretary General, Frances O'Grady. She joined us earlier on Bloomberg Radio, and I asked her about the risk now of a really difficult winter and more strikes by workers.
Well, we've got a huge number of ballots currently going. No worker wants to go on strike, particularly those workers who have a vocation, nurses, firefighters, teachers. But they only vote yes in that ballot when they feel that the boss, the government in this case, just isn't listening and isn't willing to compromise. And as I say, the big headline of this budget is that over the next 2 years, working people will take the biggest hit on living standards on record. That's just not sustainable. We're seeing one in three public servants, according to TUC research, actively considering quitting the service or taking steps to quit. If we run down our services, we won't have a trained workforce for the future. We won't have educated kids. We won't have a healthy workforce. And again, we've seen the number of people on long-term sick and not in the labour market because they're sick soar. And that's, you know, we're facing, it takes weeks to get an appointment to see your GP, never mind waiting lists for operation.
Okay. The thing is that overall households are going to suffer a record drop in disposable income. And the Resolution Foundation says that it's actually the middle income earners here in the UK that are going to be hit hard. I mean, that includes a lot of public sector workers. So it's not just the poorest in society who are going to be hit hard. Frankly, it's everybody. We are in contraction territory now, going probably into a significant recession. Everyone's being hit hard.
Well, that's absolutely right. Everybody apart from the super rich. I mean, if you were to equalise capital gains tax with income tax, that would raise enough money to give every single public servant an inflation-proof pay rise. You know, those are the sorts of choices that we now need to make. We're in recession already. There's a risk of that dipping into depression if we don't make the right choices.
Royal Mail workers are going on strike. The nurses have given the government something like 5 days to come up with a package. Rishi Sunak has said that 17%, which is the demand from the Royal College of Nurses, is unaffordable, and 17% is eye-watering. Between, you know, now, over the next 3 months, the UK could be crippled by industrial action, and that is certainly going to not help with the recession.
Well, the government would only have itself to blame. We've been trying to talk to the government for months and months and months. And, you know, there have recently just been meetings, but a number of our union negotiators are worried that this is just a sort of tick box exercise and that the government isn't prepared to enter meaningful negotiations. There is still time for it to shift course, and I would strongly advise it to, because remember, this isn't just about real pay cuts this year. Working people in Britain have had pay cuts and pay stagnation for the last 12 years. And this, people simply can't cope. You know, we've got kids going to school with holes in their shoes, people doing key jobs, important key jobs, as we saw during the pandemic, who can't afford to raise their families. So, of course, this is a last resort. But I can tell you that the workers I've spoken to have a quiet determination that they are not going to pay the price this time.
So that was Frances O'Grady from the TUC. She was speaking to us earlier on Bloomberg Radio. Again, I thought a very interesting statement. You know, she was saying how crushed workers were going to be, how difficult life was going to be for them.
Yeah, I think this issue of industrial unrest is something really to keep an eye on. There are plenty of strikes brewing at the moment. And of course, for the government, public sector pay is a massive, massive expense. And if they end up spending much more on public sector pay, that is going to knock all the chancellors' forecast out, you know, out of the park.
Well, quiet determination was the way that Frances O'Grady put it. That's the mood as she saw it amongst workers. That's it for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to give it 5 stars so that other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Well, we will be back with more on Monday. This episode was hosted by me, Ewan Potts.
And me, Caroline Hepke.
And it was produced entirely by James Walcock.
Okay, this is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions. alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox president Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.